Park, hello, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another glorious episode of the Trial and Aaron podcast, but we call it The Tap. I am your host, Aaron, and as always, I have a doozy of content for you. I know I've been promising episode with guests. They're on their way. Damn it, they're on their way. The witch lady we're going to talk next week, she had some stuff to do, some scrying and, you know, speaking to the dead to do over Halloween, but we're good to go next week and just going to ask her all about it. That's a tease for next week. Today, I want to talk to you about my top 10 favorite fictional killers, because there's plenty of them out there. Real killers, the Dahmers and Bundys of the world, the idolization and grandeurization of these assholes. I can believe it. This society just loves murderers and serial killers, and if I like fictional ones, I mean, I guess they see somewhat appeal, but it just seems like people, because they're so disconnected from that mayhem, that chaos, that they just idolize these f***ing monsters. Yeah, it's a bizarre part of society, but I'll go the fictional route so I can be on this moral hierarchy. But before I get started on my top 10 list, with some honorable mentions, damn it, the Dodgers have won the 2024 World Series. And let me just say, f*** you to the Dodgers. Cat, get out of here! Cat! That cat, Sunny, she knocked over the stormtrooper. She's pulling down my Jamaica flag, and she's not allowed in, not when we're recording. I don't know why she pulls these antics. She's a cat. She wants my life to be miserable. After I hooked her up with an extra life, taking her back from the landfill, she was doomed to die. Well, maybe not doomed to die, but, you know, it's slim pickings out there. If you can survive, you're a survivor. You're meant to be, but not most make the cut. I don't think this little turd would have made the cut. She'd be too busy fussing with people's tires and then get run over. Anyways, sorry. Got a little excited there. But yeah, fuck the Dodgers. Fuck the Dodgers. I did a little research. If you think that Dodgers and Yankees wasn't part of some kind of script or just meant to be, guess again. Because the year prior was the least watched World Series of all time. And now they have the most watched World Series of all time with these two overpaid teams, the Dodgers and the Yankees. I hate them both. And if you think baseball is an even playing field or not a beyond corrupt f***ing sports entity, guess again. Look at the minimum wages that these goddamn AAA players are playing with. The guys selling hot dogs in the stands are making more than they do. And just to see the disproportionate fairness, according to the MLB, the no salary cap or whatever with the team's revenues, it's like, it's disgusting. I get there's not all companies make the same amount of money, but if this is to be an equal playing field for all these teams, then why is there such a pay gap or of how much teams have and just what they can spend, what they can get away with? It's disgusting. We saw it in full tilt. This was not a World Series. It was a travesty. The best team money can buy. I saw a post on SportsCenter saying worth every cent. It's like, really? You can now pay your way, like as if it's always been that way. Just pay your way. Get the best players and then make it happen. Like, all right, let's see the best players distributed out to other teams and have more competitive teams, not just wash teams. Like to have the Dodgers win and to have a season the way the White Sox had a historically bad season, the worst season ever played, and the Dodgers winning, and it's not advocating for a communism of sports. Like, no, every team needs a stud or whatever, but this can't happen. The Dodgers winning because they afforded it, because they bought it all. It's f***ing bullshit. And just so you know what I'm talking about, I looked up on the Googles the payroll for the 2024 season. The highest to the lowest. The highest, the LA Dodgers. Obviously, their payroll is $249,823,654. The lowest payroll team is the Oakland A's, now of Sacramento. $60,503,298. The difference, because I put in my calculator, is $189,320,356. That is how many reasons I think are what's f***ed up with the MLB. Like, not all teams are going to be great. Some are on heaters, but it's just LA teams historically, New York teams just have a bankroll up the fucking wazoo, and I think it's absolute bullshit. So Dodgers winning the World Series, There you go. Here's some two rings for you. I do not. Here's an unendorsement. Blood feud. Declaring blood feud against the MLB and the Dodgers and the Yankees. Why not? Against the organizations. There's some players that I like, sure, but blood feud against all of them. Let's see what happens. It's been a while since I've blood feuded, but the Dodgers, let's go. I'm coming out. I'm coming for you. I'm out for blood. I will not rest. I will not rest until you are defeated. So anyways, now that I've gotten that out of my system, let's get to my favorite fictional serial killers lists. And it's from movies, shows, what have you, it's gonna be cartoons, and I'll give you some reasons. I'll give you all these reasons. Like raisins in a bowl of raisin bran. Ha! Anyways. That was such a stupid joke. That was terrible. At number 10, we have Hannibal Lecter. Yes, he could have been in the top 10 villains list, but f*** it, he's more of a killer, and I endorse him at number 10. Yes, Anthony Hopkins' portrayal of Hannibal Lecter is one of the most iconic movie roles ever portrayed, akin to a Johnny Depp playing Captain Jack Sparrow. It's that good, akin to Daniel Day-Lewis playing the oil monger in There Will Be Blood. I forget that guy's name, but he's iconic, damn it. It's just, you can't select anybody else to play that role but Anthony Hopkins. Oh, no, Tony Stark. Robert Downey Jr. playing Tony Stark. Some people are just perfect and they kill it. And there could be no other way. And Hannibal Lecter is such a scary character, but his kind of endearment for Clarice, his soft spot for her, is such an intriguing aspect of his character when he's literally biting people's faces off, eating their brains, doing a, I think he gives, was it Ray Liotta? And, the movie Hannibal, not Silence of the Lambs, but in Hannibal, he gives one of the guys, he gives him a lobotomy, he's feeding him his own brains. Like, that's some wild shit. And then he gives some brains to a little kid on the airplane afterwards. It's absolutely wild. But Hannibal Lecter, you're at number 10. And, this one I straight up said in the last podcast, he's going to be on this list. James Bond at number 9. James Bond. Now, let me do a little research. James Bond, let me do a Google search. How many people has James Bond killed?
Big meaty claws.
Oh my God. According to Time, James Bond has killed 370 villains and henchmen in the first 23 official Eon production movies. This does not does not include the 1967 spoof Casino Royale, the 1983 movie Never Say Never Again. All right, that's bizarre.
Wow.
So, 370 people. This guy has killed 370 people, often giving little clever one-liners as he's dispatching these henchmen, killing them. Like, yes, he's defending himself, but James Bond loves what he does. And then how many women has he been with? This guy's not only a murderer. How many women has James Bond slept? In 24 James Bond's films, had sexual relations with 58 different women. Oh, I thought it'd be way more. But hey, that's not bad. That's a good KP ratio, kill the poontang ratio. Not KD, KP. But Bond is just slaying foes and slaying poontang at the same time. He's a wild man, he's a madman, and how many people must die in order for the world to be safe? A lot more than that. That's wild. He's just... You take a good person, yeah, put him in war, it's going to affect them, but it just, yes, he's a raging alcoholic, but I think that's more mommy and daddy issues, orphan issues, not so much that he has murdered that many people. I don't think there's been any credence or any scene given to him feeling some guilt or traumatic effect of killing 370 people. It's a tremendous body count, and he remains. My goodness. James Bond, I salute you, you killer, you.
What the?
Number 8, what do we have? At number 8, oh, I guess right here. Oh, my first Blastoise. Oh, yeah, Pokemon Red. Got back when I was 10 years old. One of the most elite gifts I ever got for my birthday for the Game Boy Pocket. And my first Pokemon was a Squirtle. Squirtle, who I quickly evolved into a Blastoise. I remember I had Mega Punch, Seismic Toss, Bubble Beam, and Hydro Pump. Hydro Pump with a mere 8 uses, I believe. not 5. I think it was 8. It was very little. Mega Punch had like 20, Seismic Toss 25, Bubble Beam I think was another 20. So he was good to go. I could take on the Elite Four, by myself. Why? Because I roided Blastoise out with rare candies. Yes, I did the cheat. I cheated my first way through. I had him. I had Gyarados. I had a gang murderer's row of Pokemon, my select six, and I just ran the house, led by my Blastoise, who I called Buttkiss, because I thought it was silly. And Buttkiss just destroyed everybody. So I'm walking along, I'm on a path, and there's a creature, say a level 5 Rattata or Pidgey, has the audacity to come my way and take me on. Buttkiss is a killer, and he will slaughter them. Hydro Pump, I don't give a fuck. I don't care if just a glance at that low level, like a little level 3 Pidgey is enough to kill it. I will destroy you, Faint. No, you're murdering them. Something's lost in translation from Japan. You are killing these Pokemon, these beasts. And then if I go all the way up to Elite Four, they can't hold a candle to my shit. You gotta think it's Lorelei, then Bruno, then Agatha, then Lance, and then whoever you named your rival. You turds, you can't stand up against Buttkiss. Level 100, baby, roid it out. I'll give you a little rare candy for Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody, even though it's gonna be in the past when this airs. We got there, Blastoise at number 8. Number 7, we have Mulan, Fa Mulan. I'm trying to do something a little different, some characters you might not have saw coming. You might not think Mulan is a mass murderer. She's not so much a mass murderer. Some say a savior, but let me tell you something. How many...
Hey, Freak Show! You're going nowhere!
All right.
I got you for 3 minutes. Oh, my goodness. 3 minutes of playtime.
The kill count for Mulan. All right, why? Because she's a soldier. She goes, and that if not the best animated Disney movie of all time, I won't even acknowledge the live action Mulan, which is a fucking farce. It's a joke. It's a disgrace to movies everywhere. Disney, I'm about to declare a blood feud against you because you don't know how to make good movies anymore. The remakes are trash. They're nothing but money grabs, not movies. Figure it out. But in 1998, you got it right with Mulan. Fantastic cast. Mulan seems like a good person. And then comes the battle in the mountains. We don't really see death in Disney, but we just had a crazy amount of killing. And she, in the end of the movie, and then at this point where she goes with the little bazooka and she shoots the dragon head cannon goes past Shan Yu, I think the leader of the Huns, and it hits the top of the mountain when all the other Huns are just charging down in their horses. That's an epic scene. That is akin to the wildebeests coming down in The Lion King, just frightening. They're rolling down the mountain, and then an avalanche comes and wipes them out. Wipes them out. So Fa Mulan, it's an unnamed Huns buried beneath the avalanche, accidentally set off by one of the five. Accidentally? Are you kidding me? She said, what kind of nonsense, Google, accidentally?
Wow.
She had intention. She literally what is this? All right, so 28 unnamed Huns blown up by fireworks by Fa Mulan. That's at the end. She shoots the fireworks into the tower. They all get the business. An unnamed amount of Huns. 537 horses buried beneath the avalanche, accidentally set off by one of the fireworks. Underneath the avalanche, that's twice they write it, accidentally. No, that is some Google propaganda. That's ridiculous. She goes, aims it at the leader, and then's like, you know what? No, she re-aims it at the mountain with all the snow to cause the avalanche, and even Mushu, voiced by Eddie Murphy, is like, how could you miss him? He's right there. Like, she wasn't missing. That wasn't an accident. I'm pissed off, Google. Fuck you. I'll be damned, not in the tap. I'll be damned if there's any misinformation on the tap, or if we wait long enough, the government will be able to sift out this misinformation for us. Thanks, Big Brother. Anyways, Mulan, an intentional killer. So I assume with 537 buried horses, I'm willing to assume there's one, possibly two Huns on all of those horses, because they might be doubling back or just, you know, buddying up to keep warm, like Harry and Lloyd and Dumb and Dumber. 537 horses with at least as many Huns, which is a higher kill count than James Bond. Mulan, look at you go, look at you kill. So very manly of you. After that, we have number 6, Dexter Morgan. I'll give it to Dexter, even though the show did not end gracefully. It came back. I haven't seen any of the new episodes. But Dexter Morgan, the serial killer that puts his evil inclinations, his insidious urges, to good use by doing his diligence as a forensic. He's a forensic scientist, but also like does his detective work on other killers or people that are deemed worthy of his blade. And it's very ritualistic, and his moral compass is like if there's a moral, but he's totally just void of emotion, and he kills the bad guys. That's not bad. He's very methodical and a good guy, a good serial killer, which is wild. And it's such a great through season four, the Trinity Killer. That was the peak of the show with oh my God, John.
China.
Wow, how could I not remember his name? John Lithgow. Yes, I didn't look it up. I was about to. John Lithgow is a Trinity Killer. It's so good. So Dexter Morgan, and the intro to that show is one of my all-time favorites. He's just getting ready for work in the morning, and it's just so very sinister. The way he ties his shoestrings, he's strangling them. The way he accidentally cuts himself with the razor blade, blood trickling down, squeezing the oranges, slaughtering them upon the orange squeezer, like the juicer. It's just, it's so good, so nuanced. I really enjoy you, Dexter Morgan. At number five, we have a duo killer. It's a killer duo of Legolas and Gimli. Let me tell you something. I'm not sure. Let me give you some stats. Now that I have this laptop to me, how many orcs did Legolas and Gimli kill? All right, so they're in the first movie, the Fellowship. You know, they're filling each other out. But I think they do harness a little bit of a friendship there, and then it's full friendship in Two Towers, full on bromance by Return of the King. And the fact that these guys are counting their kills of Uruk-hai soldiers at the Battle of Helm's Deep, that is greatly disturbing. If a soldier like in the United States Army is counting their kills as they're fighting terrorists or the enemy or what have you, whatever, that'd be a little cause for concern. Maybe they're like taking straight delight in the combat aspect of it. Not to say there can't be an adrenaline rush, I suppose, but to look forward to killing, even if they are Uruk-hai. I mean, if they're Uruk-hai, whatever. It's a fictional situation, but to count your kills, that's nuts. That is pretty wild. In The Return of the King, Legolas and Gimli kill 41 and 42 orcs, respectively, in the Battle of Helm's Deep. Gimli won the Aixlorn contest against Legolas by what? Really? Wow. Gimli half-jokingly congrats Legolas, then announces he's sitting on his 43rd kill. Oh, man. Let's see. Legolas and Gimli alone killed 83 orcs. I feel like there could be way more than that. The troops of Isengard were not elite. They were orcs. They were not notoriously fickle. Whatever. Gimli killed the most? I don't know if I agree with that one. It looks like there's some miscounted. The ballots were miscounted, I'll say. But they are the bromance, the duo, they are amazing killers. I'd say as dirty as Gimli is, you know, filthy little dwarf, he loves him some killing. I think Legolas is the overall more efficient killer and just far more deadly. He's got the dual swords and just his aim, he is cunning. He is as cunning as the White Wizard, and he kills the poop out of him, he does. And so, Legolas Gimli combo, I give you that number five spot. Number four spot, I will give to my boy Vegeta of Planet Vegeta. Prince Vegeta from Dragon Ball Z. You heard me right. I'm going cartoon on you. This guy has destroyed planets. Since he was a boy, he would go and conquer entire planets, which, I mean, say humans, we have 8 billion people on the planet right now. Assume 8 billion or any amount of billions on a civilized planet, and he's killing them all, or at least subjugating them. Sometimes he'll just straight up destroy planets. He destroyed a planet, and him and Nappa were on the way to planet Earth for the first time. They stopped by for some fun and games. They saved the day in this kind of gladiator arena, a little filler episode, and then they end up destroying the planet after, like, they're heroes. They don't give a f***. And then after Vegeta transforms and becomes a good guy, and come the Buu saga, he succumbs to Majin Buu's curse. He gets that M on his forehead, but he let it happen. But just to prove a point, they're in the tournament grounds, and he just lifts his arm and blasts a hole into the arena filled with people. He killed, I would say, well over 100 people, and then behind, I'd say the kill count approaching 150 to 200 with at least 500 injured. That was wild. Vegeta killed the shit out of all of them. And he's just ruthless. Like, he let us know, like, I'm still that guy. And why he's not thrown in prison, or, I mean, what prison could hold this guy? But he is... He's like befriending Hitler. He's like befriending Stalin, damn near. Like, this guy is a mass murderer, and like, we're gonna think that there's just forgiveness. There's forgiveness for this guy who's murdered untold amounts of people across the galaxy. But you know, he helped us against a couple bad guys. He can stay. Bulma bangs him. So what does that say about her? Trunks, the spawn of Satan, damn near. That's why Vegeta. He's a killer, and he gets my number four spot. Number three. Braun of the Black Wata. Let's get back on track a little live action. We got Sir Braun of the Blackwater, and we see him in Game of Thrones, Gimli's little bodyguard. He's a cutthroat, and he was my guy, my pick, to survive the test of time, the test of Game of Thrones. Other friends in Season 1 were picking your Khal Drogos, your Robb Starks. It was fun in games till everybody started dropping like flies, but Braun, through and through, first season to eight, Season 8, which I despise, survived. Why? Because he has no conscience, he has no soul, he has no honor. He will just kill who he has to and look out after his own skin. He has his own back, and that's why he survives. There's no moral code weighing him down like a goddamn anvil trying to make his way through life. This guy will just kill who he needs to, and he's like James Bond. He just kills and bangs. That's what he does, and he's great at both. He's there for two things, killing and banging, and he's not done doing either. Braun, just that one-on-one duel, fighting for Tyrion's freedom in season one. He throws that knight through the moon door. That was great. Him on the Blackwater is awesome. He saves Jaime's life. Like, this guy, he's a killer. He's an efficient soldier. He's knowing, and you know, he's got a soft spot for him, Tyrion, and Podrick Payne. Like, their little bromance love triangle is just so fun to see. And it didn't last nearly long enough, damn it. I would watch a season of just those three's antics, just managing the city of King's Landing. Like, I'd get off on a sitcom like that. That'd be hilarious. So Bronn of the Blackwater, great killer. He's at number three. He's my guy. He survived. I just loved him through and through. Number two spot, my man Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. Yes! It's Christian Bale, who just, that movie, he's just hilarious. He's got the two hookers. He's filming them. He goes, "Don't just stare at it, eat it." Referring to the other hooker's ass. "Don't just stare at it, eat it." The business cards, the killing, even though it might have all been in his own mind. "Hey, Paul." He just takes the axe to the back, to the face of Paul Allen, aka Jared Leto. He kills like this homeless guy. He stomps out his dog, which pissed me off. But this guy is so sadistic and wild. He tosses the chainsaw down the stairwell, and it just annihilates that other hooker. He's just killing hookers. He's in a shootout with the cops. He blows them up. He shoots one of the orderlies in front of the hotel. He was on a rampage for the end of the movie, and it's just hilarious. Was it all in his own head? I'm not sure. Maybe it was all legit. But Patrick Bateman, I love American Psycho. It's such a bizarre movie, but I'm glad it's around. It's great for a watch every once in a while. Patrick Bateman, you're my boy. Potatoes. Godspeed. Go return those videotapes. And at number one, who had I got for number one? My number one killer. What? It's gonna be Boba Fett, obviously. The Fett. Boba Fett is just that guy. His armor, his like rockets, his flames, his cunning, he can do no wrong. I loved him in the original three Star Wars, 4, 5, and 6. And then come The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, learning more about him. It's just awesome to see that character get a little more fleshed out, and we can just fall more in love with this guy who's just a fantastic killer. He's got blasters, he's got lasers, he's got flames, he's got rockets. And he's just got, if not the most iconic armor in all of nerddom. It's just so good. I love it. I love you, Boba Fett. Yeah, that's why you're my number one. Everybody knows Boba Fett. You don't know his name, you know the face. You recognize. You don't know him, you better recognize at the very least, which moves me on. So that was my number one. That's the list. But I do have honorable mentions, damn it. I have... My handwriting so bad, it seems like Harambe mentions. These Harambe mentions, lest we forget... Mario, Super Mario. How many turtles, how many Goombas, how many Koopa Troopas has he slaughtered? Here we go. on his way to victory to save Princess Peach, to destroy Bowser and his kinsmen. Mario's a big fat killer. Luke Skywalker, big killer. I know there's a lot of killers in Star Wars. Luke Skywalker is one of them. Why? I'm going to tell you why. Because how many people did Luke Skywalker, not Scallywacker, Skywalker kill on?
I'm not gay no more.
How many people did he kill on the Death Star? Oh my. Okay. Luke Skywalker at an honorable mention gets, I'll give him the miscongeniality of this favorite fictional killer list. I'll give him the miscongeniality because, according to Google, it says Luke Skywalker, somewhere around 1.9 million people were on board the first Death Star when Luke Skywalker destroyed it, earning the young Jedi an intimidating kill count. 1.9 million people. Still not as many as Hitler or Stalin, but good Lord, Luke. The Force will be with you always. Luke Skywalker is a mass murderer. That is insane, that amount of people. Stormtroopers and Lord knows how many other alien species at the Empire's employ aboard that ship. Conscripts, people that volunteered that had aspirations to help the galaxy. Nope, Luke Skywalker's like, you're all dead, you're all done. F all of you. No diplomacy here. You're all dead. 1.9 million under the belt, which makes Luke Skywalker like the greatest killer on this list. Wow, Luke. After that, we have Mandalorian. That's kind of a given just because, you know, Pedro Pascal, he's great. A shout out to Oberyn Martell, another great killer in Game of Thrones. Doc Holliday, I know he's a real character, but I love, let's say, the fiction that is Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday in Tombstone. He's an amazing killer. He just always comes out blasting. There's a firefight. Gotta love Doc Holliday. Darth Maul, more Star Wars. Darth Maul, amazing killer. He's one of my favorite Sith, one of my favorite bad guys of all time. Why? Because he has the courage and the balls, those red and black balls, to take on two Jedi at once. When they're trying to rescue Naboo and Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan, they open up those doors, and then Darth Maul is just sitting there like, let's go. Let's throw these hands. Let's throw these lightsabers. Let's get after it. He's about himself. He knew he was going to win, and he almost did. He almost did. Darth Maul. Let's see here. The Hound, he's pretty good in Game of Thrones. I know I'm kind of staying within like a certain realm of these killers, but the Hound is another. He's a great killer. I enjoyed him up until the very end. Carter, so Chris Tucker from Rush Hour, a great killer. I mean, he really shows no remorse, and after he kills that one, like the right-hand man of the main bad guy, he shoots him. He just falls down, shoots him with his the little pistol wrapped around his ankle, and he goes up to him and says, wipe yourself off, man. You dead. And just goes on about his day. Tough talking a dead guy. I mean, I guess I'd do the same thing if this was a terrible person, terrorist type person, but I don't know. I'd say, Tucker, that's a hell of a shot. Not only did you, he's standing straight up and then drops to his butt and pulls the gun from his ankle holster and blasts this guy one in the chest because the guy had a secret gun, you know, behind his back. It was a great kill. You got to see it. Rush Hour, a cinematic masterpiece. Who else do we have? And then, of course, honorable mention, any Arnold Schwarzenegger character. His one-liners, how many people he's killed. I got to see how many people has Arnold Schwarzenegger killed in his movies. I don't think I spelled his last name right. All right, screw this. I'm done with you. Let me edit all that out. Arnie has killed quite a bit of people, and damn it, that puts him up there as an honorable mention for in Predator. I'd say they just do the greatest of killings there. One of my favorite one-liners, just he and the boys are gonna go tune up this group of gorillas in the jungle. I think it's Panama, and they have not encountered a predator yet. But you're gonna see the efficiency of Carl Weathers, Jesse the Body Ventura, and all the others. And Arnie walks into a room, a bad guy turns around, and Arnie throws this massive knife and just guts the guy and pins him to the wall, and he just goes, stick around. I love it. But anyways, I won't say I've wasted your time, but that's the list. Them's the list. Them's the honorable mentions. And Luke Skywalker with the Miss Congeniality Award of this list with 1.9 million people. That is outrageous. Luke Skywalker murdered 1.9 million people when he destroyed the Death Star. That is wild. That is unhinged. And I cannot get over it. And I feel like that will be a staple to tap forevermore. For some reason, I love that fact that this savior, this hero, murdered that many people. Ooh-wee! Ooh-wee, Luke. But it wasn't enough, because they built another Death Star and he had to kill more. Anyways, with that, you guys, maybe I'll leave you with a Goy story. Maybe, just maybe. Maybe, just maybe. Have at it, you guys. Well, thank you again for listening to the tap. If you have any suggestions for what episode themes can be about, lists, or questions, you know, go ahead, subscribe, damn it, and then, like, comment, leave comments, follow, spread this podcast like a disease, this movement, baby. It's a tapestry unto itself, just a blend of episodes and fans and good times. I have rambled on far too long. I love you guys. Thank you for listening, and until next time. Good morning, lads! Oh!
Are you having a Goy day? I know I am. And you better have had a good Goy day yesterday. Because if I find out that you did it, I'm gonna hunt you down and shove a fucking cocaine-filled Hot Pocket so far up your ass you'll be tasting it for months. But in case you had a Goy day, don't worry about it. Oh, what a glorious morn. For on this Goy story, we find Goy in his humble abode, just hanging out, watching television, until he decides to go down to his basement to visit his gimp. He walks downstairs, unlocks the door, goes in there, and we find Tiger Woods dressed up in leather, much like the gimp from Pulp Fiction. He has chains on his neck to the wall. Tiger pleads with Goy,
"Why are you doing this? Jesus Christ!"
Goy tells Tiger, "What you did to Elon was f- up. While we were banging in the back of that bus for 2 days to go fuck up A-Rod, we talked a little bit. Talked about her feelings, the kids, the family, and the trickle-down effect of your lustful ways. For Goy is not a mere animal. Oftentimes, during his 48-hour love-making sessions, he will talk to the wenches, and they respond. So just imagine Goy banging away.
So, where are you from? Oh, that's nice. Oh, no, I have family there from, there, yeah.
And it just goes on and on, a two-day lovemaking, but they also connect on a deeper, more emotional level. Goy, not the animal, but is in many ways. For the wenches could barely get words out sometimes in between climaxes. So Goy goes down at least once or twice a day to talk to Tiger and just throw golf balls at him whilst he sits there and mopes and whines like a little bitch in his gimp outfit, for which he has grown a little fond of. Then Goy receives a voicemail from John Daly.
Goy, it's John f***ing Daly. I know you asked you to do a lot of favors, but I just saw the Kim Kardashian sex tape. It's not really good at all. The angles are bad. She doesn't reciprocate. She's a terrible lovemaker. And to be quite frank with you, I can't stand the bitch. Could you go just Goy her? Thanks, buddy. I left you a little message, or a little gift in your mailbox the other day.
Goy hangs up the phone and runs outside to open up his mailbox to find no parcels, no package, no letter. But it's just merely filled with cocaine. Just an abundant amount of cocaine. Goy just sticks in his hand, grabs a handful, and just poof, just shoves it in his face. The neighborhood kids are all around watching. He says, "Don't do drugs, kids!" And then Goy disappears. Just disappears. Who knows if it was really cocaine? Some magical John Daly mixture. Meanwhile, we join the Kardashians in their house, the air filled with their smugness and arrogance. And then out of the ceiling crashes Goy. Goy gets up, slaps a security guard or two, slaps the cameraman. He's slap happy. Pop, 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 pop. Woo! He's honking now. You got him going crazy, fucking Goy. He goes up to Kim K and does that whole thing that you do with the little kids. I got your nose, but he really rips the bitch's nose off. But it's so goddamn fake that it just comes off with ease, like snapping a carrot in two. And she's like, Jesus, that's my brand. I'm supposed to be beautiful. He's like, you're ugly from the inside out, bitch. Why don't you work like a real porn star and make more movies? You have a lot of training to do, but for now I'm going to take your goddamn nose and I'm going to go away. That is the definition of getting goyed. Getting put in your place, bitched, and just brought down a peg or two, or 10. So now Kim Kardashian is noseless. And Goy replaces her nose with a fake ball sack, which is impossible to move. Just a fake old ball sack. Ah, you thought it was a white ball sack. Nay, it's a big black ball sack. Compliments of George Foreman. Goy demands homage. And last week, Goy demanded his ball sack so he cannot produce any more George Foremans. And it's hard for Kim Kardashian to speak now because there's just balls hanging from her nose down to her lips. She goes... So that's the life she lives now. And then before more security guards could be brought inside the house, Goy takes a cocaine-filled hot pocket, throws it down on the ground, poof! Like the ninja that Goy is, he disappears in a white cloud of cocaine. And then the cocaine settles and is blown away by the wind. Goy reappears at the hangout of he and John Daly. Sits down, tosses the nose at John's feet as he is getting a blowjob from the wench on demand. He's like, that's my Goy. Goy opens up the cooler, pulls out a gallon of milk for himself, and a cold brew for John Daly. The milk is just merely cocaine. Goy pulls out his spinny little straw. Nay, it's one of those beer dispensing helmets. And the cups on either side of his head, he just fills with cocaine. For the big nostril is never satisfied. And then Goy and John Daly just party off the third fairway of Augusta at their hangout like they usually do. And that, my friends, is the definition of getting goyed in this story. More Goy stories in the future. Perhaps more origin of Goy stories. But for right now, all you need to know is George Foreman's ball sack is hanging off the face of Kim Kardashian. Yes. How profound. Anywho, I hope the rest of you have a great Goy damn day. And you know what happens if Sandwich finds out if you don't have a Goy day. Yes, quite. But anyway, lads, I've taken up too much of your time. Tune in next time for another Goy story. Goy day, f***er.
You lose. Good day, sir!